What's up?
Kicked off by Simmons, and he'll return it left side of the end zone. Touchdown, Isaiah Simmons, the pick six.
Burrow, play action, tosses into the end zone. Terrace Marshall, all by his lonesome. Touchdown, Tiger!
You want to know more?
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We are exactly 1 week away from the NFL Draft. We talked about it in depth yesterday. We focused on the Utah Utes. You know, we have nine players from the Utes that may just hear their name called next week during the draft, which is a huge, huge number. Let's talk about how the offseason may have affected the draft and maybe some sleepers that you got to pay attention to. Very excited to bring in our next guest. We have had him on the show before, Joe Bartel. He's the operational specialist with RotoWire. We'll talk more about RotoWire and what it can do for you as far as fantasy sports is included as well. Joe, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to talk some sports. I know everything going on right now in the world is kind of hectic, but even during the off season or draft lead-up period, it's still a lot of great conversation we could have. So I'm excited to break it down.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, as far as the NFL is concerned, the offseason really writes stories for us on a daily basis, right? I mean, I've had people ask me, what are you talking about right now with no sports? How difficult is your job? And I got to tell them, for one, it's easy because they got guys like Joe Bartel who will join the show. But on top of that, the NFL really writes storylines for us to discuss when there's nothing going on.
Oh, right. I mean, Bill O'Brien is doing it all on his own with how idiotic he seems to be running the Texans front office overall. So yeah, you're right. And the NFL is just kind of rolling. They're loving this. And I it's a horrible thing to say, but they're front and center. There isn't anybody else that can really match what the NFL can provide. And we already knew that. I mean, the NFL is at this point 365 days a year operating as the number one sport in America. And baseball tries to take it away every once in a while, certainly the postseason. It feels like that's the biggest time for baseball, and the NBA does the same thing, and especially around the trade deadline, it feels like that's when they can grab the most people. But the NFL has everyone's attention, and they certainly do now when we're all quarantined and there's many other sports going on. So it's a big time, and you have these conversations. Okay, is the draft going to happen? Or, all right, it is going to happen. Is Dave Gettleman going to have to pick online? That's going to be funny to watch, too, right? There's a lot of different storylines within the draft itself, but the offseason and how the NFL has really decided to play it out and operate with certain players being maybe less valuable than others has been a really key point for me to watch, and I've been enjoying it in quarantine here in Wisconsin, watching how the NFL kind of operates in this weird time period.
Yeah, I know you're a big Packer guy. Okay, and so I guess we can start with this right here. I love what the Packers have as far as Matt LaFleur. I was a believer in him before the Packers gave him the reins as head coach. But there has been some rumblings about the different directions that the Packers could go in the NFL draft. So let me throw this scenario out there for you. How excited would you be as a Green Bay Packer fan if the Packers somehow found a way to land Jordan Love, who obviously has an interest, he's a person of interest here in Utah, coming out of Utah State. Would you be happy with that?
Oh, that's an interesting one, and I've heard that a few times. So obviously, as a Packers fan, Aaron Rodgers was able to sit behind Favre for a couple of years, and I do think that was a reason why he's been as successful as he would be. If you're drafting Jordan Love, I have to imagine that he's going to be sitting behind Rodgers for a couple of years. That works, and I wish more teams would do that. I understand the immediate impact the first-round pick needs to have, so I get it. I understand. But I think there is some level of reliability that can happen when you have a young player that says, okay, hey, I'm going to work behind one of the best in the league. We saw it with Daniel Jones a little bit and Eli Manning, the Giants, last year. And I think that helps. It takes away the pressure. You're always going to have pressure as a first-round pick. But if you don't have to start immediately, make a difference immediately, that's a huge thing. We saw it with Dwayne Haskins in the reverse with the Redskins, right, where he had to be the guy that really led the charge for that team. And there was questions about what his leadership skills were. We saw him celebrating with fans and didn't take the knee, right? Like, all these question marks happen when you are a younger player. But you can mitigate that, take that away when they're benched or they're kind of working behind somebody else. So I would be fine with that. I think the Packers have bigger needs, though. And maybe if you're telling me, okay, they'll trade back into the first round with one of those last picks, the Chiefs certainly don't seem to need that 32nd pick overall. The 49ers have two first-round picks, 31 being another one that maybe you could trade into. And you get that fifth-year eligibility option for a guy like, I think Justin Jefferson makes a lot of sense. But you can get him late in the first round, whereas I think Jordan Love is going to be taken in the first 20 to 25 picks at minimum, because that quarterback position is so important. The only problem is there's a lot of other teams that also need quarterbacks, and I feel like, again, where the Packers are right now, they were in the NFC Championship game, despite, of course, getting demolished and breaking my heart last year. They did get there, and I think they're only a few key pieces away, linebacker, wide receiver in particular, that could make a big difference. So if we could get a guy like Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen, and then a receiver, I would prefer that option as opposed to going quarterback. But just like Rodgers, he fell to a point where it just made sense. And if that's the case for Jordan Love, too, I would be all for it. I just want to make sure we get the other needs addressed as well.
You bring up Patrick Queen, and this is a name that I really like. There's a couple of linebackers in this class that really intrigue me, and I don't know where Patrick Queen falls. If we're talking about him at the end of the first round, if we're talking about an early second-round draft pick. But the fact of the matter is here's a kid out of LSU, 6 foot, 230 pounds. He is terrific in pass coverage. And I think that's going to be the maybe the reoccurring theme when we talk about linebackers in this draft, especially with the way that the game is going. When you talk about Patrick Queen, this is a guy that is excellent in pass coverage. And there's a couple of linebackers that maybe could go between rounds 2 and 4 that have that ability. Patrick Queen's a very interesting player, I think, going into this draft.
Oh, yeah. I would be very disappointed if Patrick Queen was available at pick 30 and the Packers didn't go that route, which means almost for certain that's what's going to happen. I can say that because I was hoping for Curtis Mosley back in the day. The Packers had a chance to take him, opted to go a different direction. I was very disappointed when we ended up trading for Jair Alexander, trading back, and not taking Derwin James with the Chargers, too. So like I can say this for certain. If a guy that I really want is there against the Packers, aren't going to take him. But you look at Patrick Queen overall, and I think, again, you pointed out, the coverage aspect is huge. He's just a difference maker. And I think if you look at the NFL overall and you see all these teams out there, there's very few difference maker middle linebackers available right now. And maybe it's just a point where in high school or whatever else, these guys are being moved to edge or defensive end and trying to make plays with the sacking and rushing the quarterback. But I think there's a real avenue for the NFL to change, especially with how pass happy it's gotten, to have guys be so good in the coverage that they make a difference elsewhere. And I think of like Luke Kuechly, for example, was a fantastic coverage linebacker. That's what made him so valuable, and he always made plays around the field. I think that's what a guy like Patrick Queen could do. He's not going to be a Luke Kuechly, but those types of players are really impactful, and I think it undervalued, at least what we've seen from NFL circles, when they probably shouldn't be, given how pass happy it's turned into the game.
Again, Joe Bartel right now of RotoWire, our guest as we talk about the NFL draft. You know, you mentioned pass coverage as far as linebackers are concerned, and here's two guys that are, in my mind, on the complete opposite end of the spectrum in that particular regard. You take a kid like Jordan Brooks, probably a second-round pick. It's going to take some time for him to adapt into that pass coverage. On the flip side of that, you take a kid from Oregon and Troy Dye, a kid that we've been very familiar with over the last 4 years here in Pac-12 country. This kid is phenomenal in pass coverage, but does lack a little bit of the physical skills, and so that's why the linebacker position for me is the most interesting going into this draft. How does a kid like Troy Dye, who maybe lacks some of the intangibles but is terrific in pass coverage, does that improve his stock at all? And then again, as I mentioned, a kid like Jordan Brooks, who is phenomenal, but you know, he lacks a little bit of that.
Well, you know, I think it depends on what team they go to, right? Like if you're getting drafted by the Patriots and you're an outside linebacker that has a one defined skill, you're going to be successful because they put you in a position to be successful. If you're going to the Bears, and I hate saying this as a Packers fan, but the Bears do the same thing too. They are able to make their defensive talent, Mr. Trubisky doesn't count, their defensive talent work with their scheme. So that's where, when you look at two of those places guys mentioned, it all depends on where they go. If you say put them in Miami, where there just isn't a lot of defined roles for the team, and they did great, Brian Flores really did a good job turning the team around in the second half, there's a lot of, all right, prove it, let's see what you guys can do, and I don't know if they would flourish in that type of system or format. So that's where I get concerned. When I look at Chassin guy or Chase guy, I always say his name wrong, who's being projected as a early or I guess mid to late first round pick from LSU. That's where, okay, you can see a lot of teams be just enamored with the skill set that he has when he hasn't really put it on the field. I feel less comfortable with those types of players than the two names that you mentioned. I think, again, if they have a defined skill set, you can put them to be in a successful spot. They might not be, you know, 14 sack guys or get 4 or 5 forced fumbles and just make ridiculous plays. That's not what you're asking them to do when they have that type of skill set. Whereas Chassin is going to be a different kind of player, and I think it could take some time to develop, yet the intangibles are there, and it's hard to ignore them.
Joe Bartel, again, our guest right now. Joe, let's talk about the running back position going into the draft. This is a market that is so unpredictable. Remember, it was unfashionable to draft a running back inside the top 10 there for a couple of seasons. The Rams do it with Gurley. They have some success early on, and then Ezekiel Elliott goes top four, and the Cowboys have had success with Zeke. And then it looks like maybe the running back market's going to die a little bit. The contracts do not look great as far as Gurley is concerned. The Rams eat a lot of money. The same can be said for the Jets with Le'Veon Bell. But then you see the Panthers make Christian McCaffrey the highest paid running back in the history of the NFL. And so I always try to judge this based off like stock markets. Right, if you're going to look at the way a position is rolling, is it buy now, is it sell now? But still, this is a very interesting running back class going into it. And really, I could see two running backs going in the first round this year.
Well, and you're talking to somebody that lives in Madison, Wisconsin, so you know I'm in on Jonathan Taylor. And I've been saying for years now that he's one of the best running backs that's coming out of the class. And I think he's going to be the best running back. And that's not to dismiss a guy like DeAndre Swift or Dobbins, who I both think are tremendous players. It's interesting. You bring up the stock market for the running backs, and I hadn't thought about it like that, but it's a great comparison. It's probably a buy-low situation right now because you have at least four prospects. And I think Clyde Hare can do a lot of things like Alvin Kamara. He's not Alvin Kamara, but can do a lot of those types of things, and that's a valuable commodity to have too. But again, just like those outside linebacks we were talking about earlier, they have to have a situation that works out for them. Taylor can do everything. I'm convinced that he's going to be a guy that catch passes and run really effectively. Yes, he has miles on the tires, and I get it. That can be a concern for some people. But you're talking about at least 4 or 5 years where he can be an effective player, and we've seen it against the top competition in a spot where you're like, all right, Badgers will be just running the ball 24-7, 100%. And Jonathan Taylor is still ripping off 200-yard games. He's got the speed and athleticism to be the effective running back at the NFL level for a lot of years in my mind. And I think DeAndre Swift and Dobbins can do the same thing. Those are three elite talents, and I think each one of them has a chance, if a team wants to get that fifth year, to be first-round talents and be first-round guys. But I don't think the running back position has had that type of level, this depth, at least top-heavy depth, in some time. So that's where maybe late first-round, early second-round, we're going to see three or four guys go. Whereas in past years, the position was already being devalued, but there just weren't these prospects that we're seeing this year.
You know what makes this terrifying? I think for a lot of teams in the league, okay, you talk about buying low, and I agree with you 100%. When you take a look at some of the teams that are in the back half of the first round, let's just take a look at the final six or seven picks. I mean, you have Seattle. You have Baltimore. Kansas City's obviously going to be picking 32. You have the Titans. It's really interesting with what the market has now done to Derrick Henry based off the McCaffrey deal. You have your Packers. You have the 49ers. You have a lot of teams that could actually take that risk of buying low, right? And it's terrifying to think about a talent like a Jonathan Taylor in Baltimore with Mark Ingram. That's terrifying.
Oh, yeah. And we've had Jonathan Taylor booked in our RotoWire mock drafts now for the last three editions. To Kansas City. I mean, Baltimore is terrifying. Can you imagine him with the Chiefs? That's where we're talking, at least from a fantasy perspective, that Jonathan Taylor, and I've done a few Dynasty League drafts so far and also a few best ball leagues where it's just it takes the best scores each week and you don't have to do any sort of lineup stuff. Jonathan Taylor's going in the second or third round, and I think it makes sense. And if he goes to a team like the Chiefs and he is deemed the guy over Damian Williams, and Andy Reid comes out and says, hey, we're giving Taylor 200-plus touches and he's going to see the field for at least 60-70% of the time, in that offense, how can you not have him as a second or third round talent? So it's going to be really interesting to see. And there are situations, you mentioned the Ravens, Mark Ingram not getting any younger, right? And much of these teams have made it so far in the playoffs last year. Titans are a great example, but the 49ers too were super dependent on their running game. We know that the NFL is reactionary, and what happened this past year is the most important thing for most teams. I would not be surprised at all if there's going to be perhaps an overemphasis on the running back position. And it wouldn't make sense most years, but you have three or four names that I mentioned earlier that can be difference makers. And I think that's where it's different than past seasons, where maybe they do overreach and take a guy late first round, early second round, but they're going to make an impact because they're just so good in Swift, Taylor, and Dobbins.
Joe Bartella, get a RotoWire right now. Joe, before I let you go, give me the most interesting storyline in your mind going into the draft. And it doesn't have to be something that's being widely talked about. It doesn't have to be about who jumps into the top five. I don't care if this is a seventh round pick, a sixth round pick, a total sleeper. What's the most interesting storyline for you going into the draft?
For me, and this comes from a fantasy perspective, but it's going to be what happens to the wide receivers. And we've had a lot of internal debate at RotoWire and some articles and podcasts as well talking about the draft and what it means, and knowing how good this receiver class is, and I think we're going to see in the next 10 years or so, this is going to be one of the best receiver classes of all time. I feel confident saying that now. But like guys like Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb are top-level talents that are probably going to be pushed down to picks 10, 15, 20, because there isn't as much of a need, knowing there are so many other great receivers available. So because this class is so deep and the free agency class wasn't very good, and we saw the NFL really be stingent on it, right? Guys like Robbie Anderson and Breshad Perriman didn't get as big a deal as we thought they might because everyone was anticipating this class. But does that mean they're going to wait in the draft, or are they going to be aggressive in trying to get these top-level guys? Justin Jefferson probably should be more of a top 15 pick in different classes, but he might fall in the first round with how deep this class is. Henry Ruggs is so good because he's fast. We saw John Mosca taken so high because of that. He's maybe the third best receiver in this class because CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy are so good. So what happens to these receivers? And I'm thinking like Brandon Ayuk, where does he end up taken? Or Donovan Peoples-Jones, right? Like these athletic, talented guys that would normally be at least first-round talent, maybe late first-round, but at least first-round talent, getting pushed so far down. Will the NFL teams be aggressive in trying to acquire the wide receiver talent or play it safe and see guys that are maybe better than they should be for the draft stock fall lower?
Again, Joe Bartel of RotoWire. I've talked about this several times here on the show. I'm an avid fantasy baseball player. I highly recommend the RotoWire app. It's a must if you play in a deep baseball league. Joe, of course, you put an emphasis on football as well. Let the people know everything about RotoWire and some of the things that you guys put an emphasis on to help fantasy sports players on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak on behalf of what I do. So I'm the operations specialist at RotoWire. That title could probably spend 15 minutes being talked about, but I do ask an expert features on the RotoWire site. So if you are a subscriber to RotoWire, and certainly feel free to, we have content going on every day, despite everything that's going on with sports right now, whether the articles or updates on players or whatever else, you have the ability to go ahead and ask questions about your deep dynasty baseball leagues or football or whatever else. And I'm on the computer daily answering questions from users that might be more difficult, that might not be completely focused for what you're tailored to. And that's where I come into play, and a few of my other colleagues are able to answer those questions as well. And we have apps that are being worked on right now for the NFL season. We've got projections set and I think also being tinkered with up-to-date news on what's going to happen with baseball and NFL and NBA too. And this gets applied to not just those sports, but I know that Premier League is getting started over in Europe too. Like if you're interested in soccer or you want to get into more DFS circles, we have a lot of different articles covered for you, including esports, which is also another title of mine too. I am the esports editor at RotoWire. So there's a lot of different things that we're doing to help people get through this time without traditional sports happening for the most part. And we're still updating everybody on all the news that is occurring, despite maybe being a little bit less than we would expect it in May.
Joe, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time once again. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports and went by in a hurry. I got to thank Joe Bartel and also John Pessa for taking out the time to join us. Do not forget, you can listen to Drive Time Sports on demand at CastleCountryRadio.com. Be safe. I am out.